listening to the Caffeinated Thoughts Podcast. Hi, this is Shane Vanderhart. Welcome back to another episode. Today, I had a conversation, or I feature a couple conversations I had with two candidates. The first is a conversation I had with Iowa Secretary of State Paul Pate late last week. He explains what he's done in his role as Iowa Secretary of State, what he plans to do if reelected. And then I had a conversation just today with Marco Battaglia, who's a Libertarian nominee for Attorney General of Iowa. So before we get to those interviews, first a word from our sponsor.
At American Principles Project, we believe that human dignity should be at the heart of public policy. We work in all 50 states and in Washington, D.C. to promote life, religious freedom, local control over education, authentic economic progress for working Americans, and a return to constitutional principles such as federalism. Want to help American Principles Project? Visit our website today, AmericanPrinciplesProject.org. That's AmericanPrinciples, P-L-E-S, Project.org. Sign up for email updates. Help us out. We want to work with you. That's AmericanPrinciplesProject.org.
Without further ado, here's my conversation with Iowa Secretary of State Paul Pate.
So, Secretary Pate, welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Podcast.
It's great to be here.
So, I just wanted to ask you, first of all, you've been, I think, attacked relentlessly over the voter ID bill. Over some misconceptions about, you know, the voter ID. There was that court case where they ruled against you. Could you speak to some of the misconceptions and what the law actually requires and how you are addressing some of the current concerns brought up by the Supreme Court or the district judge, I believe?
Sure. Yeah, it's unfortunate. There's a very liberal minority out there that just wants to keep hammering and hammering on this one. Iowans overall want voter ID, and they understand that we're protecting something very important, and that's the integrity of their vote. The piece of legislation we passed was very encompassing to make sure that we ensured that people would have access, but also, frankly, we wanted to make sure that we had integrity. So we had it out there with soft rollout. We're rolling along. We went through a primary here in Iowa with no problems, and then all of a sudden the liberals decide, well, let's throw a little lawsuit in here at the 11th hour, and that's what they've done. We had to go before a very liberal district judge who apparently likes to write legislation from the bench, because her position was, well, there is no voter fraud, so you don't need voter ID. And that was a bit alarming, because judges aren't supposed to be writing the laws. They're supposed to be enforcing them. But
right.
we took it to the Supreme Court, Iowa Supreme Court, and we're pleased that we had a stay, if you will, on the soft rollout part at the polling site. But what we are unfortunately had to do was on the absentee portion, we were not able to implement the requirement that they use the voter ID PIN number we've assigned.
Okay.
So that component wasn't used. And I say I'm disappointed, because 40% of Iowans are voting absentee. And that was always my main concern going into this, is we don't see those people. We don't know who they are. And it's hard to know if they're really legit or not, because there was not a security mechanism. Now, we're putting those in place now, so we'll know more in the future.
Okay, so I talked to this week the your Libertarian opponent, and she's actually an opponent of voter ID. She says, one, it costs too much money, and two, she just doesn't think there's the cases of voter fraud to in Iowa that justifies the program. How would you respond to that?
Well, that means that she's not paying attention, and she's not aware of why we do it. I'll bet that she locked her car door when she parked it in downtown, and I submit to you she probably locks her house when she leaves it, and there isn't a rash of burglaries or car thefts. You lock it and protect it because you value what it is, and Iowans value their vote, And that's why we do voter ID. I've never implied this massive voter fraud, but what's the magic number? The liberals, give me the number. And of course they don't. Is it one bad vote, 10, 100, 200? The legislation that we were successful in passing gives us the mechanism in the future as we go forward, we'll start being able to report that information. We're requiring the county auditors and the county attorneys to investigate these potential fraud issues and report back their findings so we can actually give you hard numbers. Right now, those aren't collected, and it's very frustrating. So to answer the question of my opponent, she needs to understand that when you have something that's important, you don't wait until it's damaged or stolen. You protect it up front. And that's what we're doing in this particular case.
So, and you're basically saying too that there's more cases of this than most Iowans realize. It's just
I believe it doesn't get reported and investigated. Yeah, I believe there probably are some instances out there, but I can't give you a hard number. And
sure.
What I do know is we have had several very close state legislative races that were determined by 10, 20, or 100 votes, and that's where we want to make sure that we only count legitimate votes. And whether that's a problem with people who shouldn't be registered or aren't really eligible, whether it's people that are voting more than once, we have caught those in the past and we've prosecuted those instances. But there's also problems with same-day voter registration where people might be registering and we get bounce backs where after the election, the auditor can't figure out where they're really at because the address they wrote down is not getting mail delivered to them. So we turn into detectives having to track them down and see if they just put a wrong address down or if they perhaps weren't legitimate. So there's a lot of questions we need to get answers to, and the Integrity Act we passed is a big part of giving us those resources to do it.
Okay. So Democrats and your Democratic opponent, Deidre DeJure, basically, you know, they're saying, hey, voters are going to be disenfranchised. How is it that, how in the law are you making sure that nobody, you know, people who are eligible to vote can vote?
First off, 92% of Iowans have a driver's license, so we're already off to a good start. The percentage that was left, we sent them a voter ID card back in December. We have been publicly reminding them, so if they didn't, for whatever reason, keep it or notice it when it came in the mail, that they can call their county auditor and get another one sent to them. We also recognize passports, veteran IDs, tribal IDs, and we're actually working with the colleges to get them to put their college IDs up to par, so that could be a potential in the future. So those are all there, and the best answer I can give, we just went through 40-some special elections in Iowa under this soft rollout and a major primary without the world coming to an end with voter ID. The Democrats, in fact, had a record they had one of their highest voter turnouts ever for a primary. But we had a record number in the state of Iowa for absentees. So voter ID did not impede anybody from going out and voting. In fact, the Democrats put the word out with a toll-free number saying, please call us if you run into any problems, because they were trying to build a case against the voter ID. And guess what? They didn't get anything. So we've been tested, and we've been proven that we can do it, but it's not easy. I've got the ACLU out there posting on their social media that we are photo ID and that you have to have it or you can't vote. A lot of misleading information if not actually true, because even if you forget your ID in the future, we can vote provisional and they will have to come back with their ID or they can use an attester. So again, we're not turning people away, but you know, I think it's okay to ask for a little responsibility here in voting. This is a pretty important thing. So that's all we're doing.
I agree. I'm just playing devil's advocate. I want you to explain this, because for people who may not understand this, I think this is just common sense. Just a couple questions follow up on what you talked about. First, how are student IDs currently not up to par? What are you expecting Regent universities and private colleges to do in Iowa?
Well, we've reached out. we've reached out to them and said that we wanted them involved in the dialogue. They need expiration dates on there. We need some address information on there. There's got to be something that's can prove that who's packing the ID is who they are. And a lot of that can be put on the barcode system, so it isn't really requiring them to change a physical format as much as if we can get it on a barcode. That would help us go a long ways. But we're getting there. We've had good dialogue with them, and I think that's a positive step. The Dwayne Register even came out with a poll recently that showed 92% of Iowans said, "Hey, this voter ID thing is not a problem. We get it. We have no problem voting." The same Des Moines Register did a statewide poll a couple of years back, and overwhelmingly, Iowans said, "Yes, we want voter ID." That was including Democrats and Independents. So Iowans understand it, they support it, but unfortunately, we have some elite in the media and in some liberal organizations that want to do our thinking for us and tell us that perhaps we aren't sharp enough to make these decisions, and they're going to tell us what's right. And I find that offensive.
In one case, it's that they're actually one and the same, a former Des Moines Register employee's communications director for one of those organizations. So, at least he found his true call. So,
I think it's intriguing that the Des Moines Register did not one but two polls reinforcing how voter ID is an acceptable means of protecting the integrity, and Iowans want it, but they themselves go out of their way to say that it's a bad thing.
Well, they probably polled them again. It's like, oh, that can't be right. Let's do this poll again.
Well, I kind of think it reflects why certain publications have declining subscriptions.
Yeah. Oh.
They don't speak for Iowa.
Right. Right. So, the other follow-up question I had to this discussion about voter ID. I'm not sure. I know I have kind of I'm not entirely sure I quite understand what provisional balloting is, and so I'm going to assume my listeners don't. Could you explain that to us?
Okay. Yes, that's a good question. I call it the safety net. We've had that in place for some time, and we still do. It's when a person comes in to vote, if there's any kind of question of technicality that maybe we're not sure that person should be voting, it could be an issue dealing with establishing, are they really the resident at this address? Do they have their voting rights returned if they're a felon? Some of those kind of, or perhaps we believe they voted absentee. So what happens is the poll worker will let them vote, but they put it in an envelope and it is kept separate. It does not go into the total, with all the other votes. And then mm-hmm. the county auditor will review these with the appropriate processes to see if they should be considered and put into the final vote totals. And the individual has every right to make a case for what they believe, why they think they should be voting. But what it does is it doesn't stop them from voting on election day, but it also does not compromise the integrity by putting it in the box without checking it out to make sure it's
okay.
Right.
So once it's checked out, then it's counted?
Correct.
Okay. Okay. Should you be reelected, where do you want to take the Secretary of State's office in the future? I mean, what can we expect, 4 years
sure.
from now?
Well, the mission's not over. We've got to finish this voter ID initiative. If my opponent is successful, they're not going to show up in court. They're going to let the court say no voter ID. So all that we worked for will be dismantled and put to the wayside, and that's unacceptable. So I've got to finish that job, and we clearly need to work on ensuring that the counties have all the resources they need to protect the integrity from cyber attacks and from other fraudulent efforts in voting, because in my opinion, one fraudulent vote is too many. And that's where the liberals and I differ. They seem to think it's okay if a few go through. And I don't believe that's accurate at all. And participation and integrity are not mutually exclusive. You have to have both.
Well, you don't have to have too many, especially if it's coordinated in a particular, we've had House legislative races decided by fewer than 20 votes. So you don't really need that many fraudulent votes to make a difference.
Well, that's part of it. And frankly, it is also the fact that if Iowans see this and start looking at going like, well, obviously my vote doesn't matter if you're letting these other people vote fraudulently, thus why bother to vote? Or better, worse yet, they're going to say, well, that's not my governor, or that's not my president, or that's not my congressman, because I don't think they're enforcing integrity. And that's not acceptable. And frankly, not only the liberals are creating that problem, but that's what I believe the Russians and other bad actors are doing. They can't hack Iowa. We vote by paper ballot. But they can mess around through the social media and try to convince Iowans or Americans that there's some question of the integrity, and then they win their battle. And we can't accept that. We've got to push back and fight back and protect what's valuable to us, and the vote is certainly one of those.
Okay. Well, election security and overseeing elections is just one half of your job. Let's talk about the other half. The half that's maybe, I guess, not in the public eye is nearly as much. And that's, right. Working with business filings and things like that. There's been some changes made in the prior 4 years. Can you kind of discuss what you've done in that area?
Sure. Well, as a business person myself, I felt the frustration of government putting more and more red tape and not being sensitive to the fact that, hey, we're running a business here, and everything the government throws at us is extra overhead that doesn't produce one single new widget. So in my office's case, we're the portal, if you will, for businesses in Iowa. All business filings are through us. A lot of other registrations come through us. A lot of the credit liens go through us. So we've got hundreds of thousands of businesses we interact with. So the first thing I've done when coming back into this position was, hey, we've got to streamline it. We've got to cut the red tape. So we worked hard to upgrade the technology so that we could let these businesses actually operate at the speed of business, not government, meaning you don't have to wait till they open up in the morning and you get to them before 4:30. These filings, mm-hmm. we're setting them up so they can do them online, and thus we fast-track it. Literally, what used to take a week or more, they can do in 3 to 5 minutes online. And that means that you don't have to live in Des Moines to get better access by driving over to our office. You can do it from Charles City, Iowa, or Ida Grove.
Okay, so do you see any changes made in the future to make that even more efficient or
certainly,
even better still?
Certainly. We've got to continue to finish the task here. We've got our new corporate filings are on this fast-track process. We're now going into doing the other areas of filing so that hopefully within even earlier the year from now, all of them will be on online fast tracking so companies can operate. And we're going to be able to shift resources over, because just what we're doing right now is going to save us 4,000 man hours a year. That means I can take those personnel hours and have them on the phone or online helping customers with personal services rather than putting them into a phone answering system and wondering if you'll ever get an answer. So that's a big step forward, is being able to shift to more customer service and moving the entire process to the technology age. I kind of think sometimes my office before I came back kind of skipped the whole Bill Gates era. We were looking at some pretty old technology in there, and I put a priority on changing that. So we've got to finish implementing that, and I think by what we're doing, we can serve as an example for other state agencies to follow our lead and offer some of these same initiatives in other areas of the government.
Great. So is there anything else that's coming up that maybe I'm not thinking to ask that you would mm-hmm. like to tell our listeners?
Well, we've got a few big things coming up around the corner. I was successful in getting legislation that would allow 17-year-olds to register and be able to vote if they're 18 by November, because both the Republican and Democrat parties allowed 17-year-olds to participate in caucuses, and I thought it was appropriate they'd be voting in our primaries. So starting in 2019, that'll be a reality, and I think that'll help inspire them to be future voters too, not just in a one-shot deal. That's a big one, and we also merged city and school elections to one date in November, because we had such dismal turnout. Nobody was even going out. There was like 4 or 5% of the people voting in these school or city elections, and that's not acceptable. And I'm not here to give a magic number, but 4 or 5%, we value
it. We can do better.
In this state? I think we can. And so that's something we're implementing here as we go in 2019. And of course, just the partnering that my office is doing with the FBI and Homeland Security and other agencies to ensure we have the cyber protection out there so no one is concerned about bad actors coming to our state is something we've got to keep on top of. Elections are like a long-distance race with no finish line. You've got to keep working every day, and that's what I'm doing, and I will continue to.
Great. Well, one last question. It's a new one. Sure. I'm starting to ask people that have not asked this question for, before, and since we're the Caffeinated Thoughts podcast, what is your favorite coffee drink?
Yeah, well, I'm going to kill you because I'm
you don't like coffee,
soda
do you?
Guy. I'm a soda guy, yeah.
Well,
I blow the whole thing, don't I?
Yeah, well, you get your caffeine.
I would have to
take caffeine in a different way.
I take my caffeine through my Pepsi and Coke products, but I would tell you when I'm off duty, an Irish coffee is pretty darn good.
Nice. Well, you're in good company. My wife doesn't like coffee either. So, all right. Well, Secretary Pate, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for your time.
Sure.
All right. Thank you.
And I just want to remind your listeners to be a voter and get out there in November.
All right. Thanks so much. Good luck.
All right.
All right. Bye-bye.
And here's my conversation with the Libertarian nominee for Attorney General of Iowa, Marco Battaglia.
Marco, thank you so much for taking time to speak with us on the Caffeinated Thoughts podcast.
Yes, thank you for having me. Happy to chat with you.
So the question I ask every candidate I speak to for the first time, unless it's maybe somebody who's been in office for a long time, why are you running?
In my case, it was studying this position, kind of the justice system as it currently stands in Iowa, and I was originally in our first primary for governor of Iowa, and just seeing this position go unopposed, I saw no primaries from the Democrat Party or the Republican Party, and then when encouraged by a number of lawyers or county attorneys and people in law enforcement to accept the nomination, I didn't want to see this race go unopposed. I think there was plenty of concern over many years with our current attorney general and things that were concerning to me, seeing him, you know, not talk about what some of the problems were or what he was going to change in a, you know, given four more years. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I was basically not wanting to see this race go unimposed. Let's try to give him opportunities to show up to you know, be held accountable by the public. Yeah.
Okay. So I know I've thought this, so I'm sure other people are probably thinking this as well. You're not an attorney. At least I don't believe you've gone to law school. How are you qualified?
So what I am is pre-law from the University of Northern Iowa. I've had multiple curriculum of study in legal research, specifically Iowa legal research, writing for law, the Iowa rules of courts, and actually spoke with a number of people that are on the bar in Iowa that still encourage me to run, you know, it being an elected position.
Mm-hmm.
My experience in political science and then also in the private sector in terms of I have worked with law regarding insurance, banking, home mortgage, have worked in financial crimes, so over a decade of experience kind of on the front lines, and that's dealt with things like usury, money laundering, elder abuse, and really any manner of kind of the scams that are hitting anyone from a young person taking out their first credit card or looking into student loans or, you know, an older person getting a call fishing for information or kind of telling them, you know, they're going to enter a contest. So I've seen, I think, the scope of, same with contractor abuse, things of those nature, kind of seen the scope. I worked on cases from the private sector and different aspects of the legal system that way. So I feel like I'm more on the pulse than our current AG, because I don't know that he's kept up on new sorts of scams and technology. I know Adam Gregg, when they debated, kind of made a comment that he didn't even use email, and he didn't come back to say that he did. So I don't know. I've never heard an answer as to whether he kind of is hip to the new technology.
He's got people to email for him.
Oh, yes. And he's been notoriously bad at meeting with, even if it's county attorneys or law enforcement or especially the citizenry. I was privileged in that I got a call from the assistant attorney general, Tabor. That's how he speaks to me. So I just wanted to make sure that he was getting these debate invites. And so the assistant attorney general called me and said, yes, he's received them, but he is not going to be accepting any of them. So there was four opportunities for us to debate, as well as an Iowa State Fair opportunity that we were both invited to do the Iowa State Fair kind of stump speech. And I was accepted and present at all of these. One was a League of Women Voters event, and then the Iowa Press on public television, and then Simon Conway from WHO gave both of us an open mic. So kind of across the left to right spectrum, there was plenty of opportunity. Even if he just wanted to take the softball and do kind of the debate in front of an extremely liberal crowd, I would have been just fine to do that myself. So it's definitely the ball's been in his court at least on four occasions, and he is I've shown up and he has not. So I think best I can gather is that he did not want to draw attention to someone else, seeing probably not knowing exactly my knowledge of the law or on liberty matters. Maybe he thought, he thought he would only lose by getting more attention to someone else in the race. So kind of made his decision, I guess.
So he's not really campaigning at all, it sounds like.
No, it's really been, as far as I'm aware, in the last week, he has had some Democrat-only events, they turned into fundraisers, which is kind of absurd to me, because if you're not campaigning, why are you raising funds? It was touted as a free breakfast, and then they asked for the $50, the $150, the $500, the $1,000 donation. And last weekend, he actually had a guest, Steve Bullock, who's governor of Montana, and I don't know what you know about him, but he seems to be lawsuit happy, just like Tom Miller, and also very poor on the Second Amendment. So it was kind of interesting, and at the same time, I actually got an endorsement from former Governor William Weld, who was the VP candidate for the Libertarian Party, and that was kind
governor
of a
Massachusetts.
Nice. Yeah, and state attorney general, I believe. He was a federal attorney at some point. But I think Clinton actually asked him to be the ambassador to Mexico at some point, and he turned that down. but that was actually an honor, because it made it very apparent to me that he read through my platform. And that he's been kind of listening and learning to some of the concerns that people in the Libertarian Party had with, a high-profile Republican joining the party.
Right. So circling back to the original question, there is no statutory requirement for you to be an attorney or member of the Iowa Bar, correct?
No. There's no requirement for that at this position. And I actually think that... There's actually some reasoning why we've had Tom Miller would have been unopposed a second time if if I, you know, didn't accept the nomination. The bar is kind of known. I've talked to lawyers that kind of say if you don't kind of play by the old boys club, that you have trouble starting up as an attorney in your own practice in Iowa right now, and also seems to be some nepotism and cronyism in terms of getting to positions of power at the county attorney level and beyond. It's kind of, to me, it's kind of been used as a stepping stone for political careers more than the role as it is in Iowa code deemed for, you know, what you're supposed to be doing as Attorney General of Iowa. I think that there's actually a reason why they don't have that requirement, especially going back to the state constitution and even the federal constitution, some concern about what lawyers would do in those kinds of positions. And also case law to me, which is what a lot of people with JDs pick up on. And there's actually a quote that put in the Iowa Press where I said, you know, case law is kind of divergent, in my opinion, to the founders' intent. So I see some problems with it being, if they were to make it mandatory that you have to be, you know, on the bar in that state to run for that position.
Okay. So I looked at your website and your tagline is justice reformed. What do you mean by that? Why does justice
for me,
reformed?
Yeah. Yeah. A big one to me is people that have gone through the justice system, that have, you know, in many cases trying to do the right thing, still have a very high burden in Iowa, and that's in a couple of ways. Occupational licensing reform, I think, is a huge one where there is tripartisan agreement, and we actually had
a
libertarian.
Tripartisan. That's not what I hear very often.
Well, hopefully we'll be hearing it more because it came from Nebraska. We have a libertarian senator, Laura Ebke, and she introduced occupational licensing reform legislation that then went through the legislature, passed nearly unanimously. I think one person voted against it, and then the governor, Ricketts, signed that legislation. And so this is like a modernized review of licensing in the state, and actually making sure that licenses are reviewed on a regular basis to see, you know, is this still necessary? Is this playing its proper role that it was intended for in terms of public safety? Are there barriers to competition by having a license for this specific occupation? Is there a burden against people that have a criminal record in the past, and especially a nonviolent criminal record? Are we making it harder for them to go up the economic ladder in a way that's unnecessary any longer? And especially in Iowa, I see this as needed because there's some licensing that goes back 50 or more years that at bare minimum needs an honest review, if not an actual change to the licensing.
Right. So you would be pushing for legislation to do this, because how does that fall in the purview of the Attorney General, I guess?
Well, the Attorney General does have the power to introduce legislation, and also would have the power to work with the legislature to focus on this.
Okay.
And to me, it, you know, you see Tom Miller give his opinion on pretty much every bit of regulation that comes down the pipe, it feels to me. So at bare minimum, I would be willing to champion it as something I would like to see get done. And if no one introduces it, I would be willing to help introduce occupational licensing reform, a pretty simple piece of legislation, more by example of what got passed in Nebraska. I mean, with any legislation, there's a concern, you know, they'll throw in all these other things that give it a hard time to pass. But I think Nebraska set a good example of occupational licensing reform that can be done. Also criminal and civil justice reform, to go back to the question. Family law is an area of grave concern that I have seen kind of being brought to my attention in pretty much every corner of the state. I don't know if you're familiar with the term parental alienation.
No, I'm not. What does that mean?
Okay, so
I kind of have an idea what it means, but, you know, what does it legally
sure,
mean?
Sure. It's a study of the impact that can happen when a parent is separated from their child, and that can be intentional by one of the parents alienating the child from the other parents or a family member, or it can be due to an action that the state has taken, whether it be in family court or whether it be through CPS or Department of Human Services in a broader sense. And I've spoken to many parents and grandparents that have, you know, really heartbreaking stories. There's actually currently an incentive, sort of like the renewable fuel standard. There's an incentive that connects us to the federal government every time that a child is actually taken from their biological parent or from a guardian that the state did not appoint and given into foster care. There's money given to us from the federal government. This actually stems from a Clinton family law legislation. It went through during the Clinton administration, and Bill Clinton signed it. I think we need to work to remove the incentive, and that this needs to be a matter of criminal law. If someone gets charged, with a crime where they've harmed their child or harmed a child, that is a whole different ballgame, and we can be tough on that. But in many of these family law matters, there's no trial of criminal activity. There's no, you don't have due process. You have less due process than someone that murders someone in Iowa. So that's definitely an area we want to shine light on. And also the general, some of these problems coming along with scheduled substances that are unscientific or racial disparity in terms of people, you know, worried about losing their Second Amendment rights if they use medical cannabis, in terms of people getting their voting rights back, their gun rights back. I think that needs to be addressed. Another huge one is the backlog on rape test kits. Met with law enforcement from a number of counties and police chiefs, and really, I think if I can champion that, that'll be huge in terms of being tough on violent crime, taking on human trafficking, because there's an existing backlog where, you don't want your law enforcement having this indefinite period where they don't know if they're going to have evidence they need, especially in something as atrocious as a sexual assault.
Right.
But those are some of the general areas. Civil courts are kind of a mess too, in terms of we have these nitrate issues and people that don't want a CAFO, a large farm unit moving in next door. And in terms, to me, the civil court is the best way to handle those things. But right now, there's a lot of barriers to people getting a lawyer, or a lawyer that's willing to take on such a case, whether that be taking on, a Department of Human Services, or that be taking on eminent domain abuse. To me, there's a lot that needs to be looked at minimum, shine light on these issues. Why are the civil courts not working to the point of where we think we need legislation regarding the nitrate issue and who's going to pay for it? Whereas to me, the most fair way would be to see maybe why the civil courts aren't functioning as intended.
Okay. So you also mentioned addressing mental health. How do you think that needs to be addressed? I mean, what would be some of your ideas? It's obviously a huge issue here in Iowa.
It is. I've been campaigning on it all year now, and I think I've been to every mental health facility in the state in some capacity, even if not just as a private tour. So I think that this is a huge issue that is a public safety issue, especially when, like we've heard, thankfully, we've heard it all the way up to the governor, at least where people are aware of this issue now, where first responders, be it law enforcement or emergency response, are increasingly the people that handle mental health issues when there's no other avenue in our counties. I have been an advocate for what's called the clubhouse model of mental health rehabilitation. And this, we have this example here in Des Moines with a place called Passageway Mental Health Clubhouse. And what this is generally run by people that have, rehabilitated from their own mental health issues, breakdowns, and or maybe they're still dealing with it, but they feel they've had it under control and gotten back in the workforce and got their personal lives in order. But this is outside of the realm of whether someone has insurance or not. It's a place that you're not going to get turned away from, regardless of any aspect, short of someone turning to violence or something of that nature. And you actually work side by side with the people at the clubhouse. It starts out with maybe somebody just needs to get cleaned up or learn how to get proper nutrition if they've been so far gone. So starting with cooking and cleaning up after yourself, and then getting back into the workforce, helping people find active work and find employers that are willing to accept that, hey, this person could be a great worker, but they're working out of a mental health situation or something that they're going to have to deal with their whole lives, depending on the issue. But this model has worked nationwide in terms of recidivism, keeping people out of hospitals and prisons, jail cells. Just basically, if we have the bare bones to have support like this in every county, and thanks to legislation signed by the governor last cycle, that kind of bare bones to get support, at least in a tri-county area, everywhere in the state, is there. But it doesn't mean that people are actually receiving support yet. Kind of means, hey, here's a path to how we get there. So this next session and the next couple of sessions are going to be huge. So I think getting people in statewide office and leadership positions that have a grasp of what's going on the front line is going to be huge, even if that is just us trying to work together with all existing political parties and the independent or two that we have. Even if it's just lobbying and conversation, I think it's going to be huge. Once again, if it came down to it where a lawsuit or introducing legislation appeared expedient, necessary, I would entertain that idea. I really think it's kind of gotten out of hand where the Attorney General jumps to a lawsuit with the federal government, and it's usually a very partisan thing.
Right.
To me, you would only do something like this if you see an Iowan that has been negatively impacted by actions of the government, and then you support them up to a lawsuit. But in a lot of these cases, it's someone like Tom Miller jumping on with Democrat attorney generals to be party to a lawsuit that has not affected anyone in Iowa. And I think that's a problem. And it happens both ways. Republicans
right.
do it with Republican administrations, and Democrats do it with Democrat administrations. So, yeah, I think that's something that would be on the table if we have a real boondoggle with Medicaid and with mental health reform, where Iowans are you know, being, you know, negatively impacted in so many ways, then there may be a need for it to come to that. But I think that's another area of that tripartisan agreement where I haven't talked to anyone from any political stripe or lack thereof that's not concerned about what we're doing next for that next step on mental health.
Okay, thank you so much for that. Two more questions, and then I'd like to give you a chance to give your closing arguments to our listeners. The first one is you also mentioned you want to take on corruption. Where do you see corruption that's blatant in Iowa, how would you address it?
Yeah, a huge one is sort of what amounts to legal bribery, and this happens at the Attorney General's office, where you know, a donation comes in from a utility or from a company like Microsoft or Google or even a pharmaceutical company like Pfizer. All of these give donations to our current Attorney General. To me, this is a position of maybe above the rest that you want only beholden to the people of Iowa, attorney for the people, beholden to Iowa code, and just this idea that they're somehow giving money to someone that can write legislation and that has the power to take up lawsuits or say, you know, this is something that's unconstitutional, let's take this as far as it will go in court. To me, this idea that someone in that position is taking unethical donations. In one case, Citibank is another one that goes to the current Attorney General. So when you're actually dealing with banks that are under the radar for money laundering, for usury, to me, though it might not be blatant corruption, it's still a problematic thing to kind of be pocketing money on the side from these sorts of people that you may have to be legislating on or deciding, you know, legal matters regarding actions that they have taken. Parental rights and county attorney level is another area where it just seems like whenever people are not getting due process in Iowa, there's a problem to begin with, and then we have to look at, is this how they are being prioritized to handle these situations? It's kind of a systemic seeds of corruption from the top down and my prerogative. So look at things like nepotism and cronyism in the judiciary at the county attorney level, in terms of just a basic law. Is a law unconstitutional or burdening the people of Iowa? So to me, it's sort of an independent investigation that I would say that needs to happen into corruption in the family law situation, and also more support for access to the law to every Iowan, whether this be things like American with Disability Act advocates, legal technicians that can help people that either have an attorney that doesn't want to take on the state or that have an attorney that or can't afford an attorney, things of that nature. So it kind of blurs the line as to, is this corruption or is this a lack of access to justice? But yeah, to me, a lot of what has stopped our path to more medical freedom, whether that be ending certificates of need, which even surprisingly, a number of Democrats that have gotten on board with kind of shocked me. But working to kind of have a more direct and transparent access to the medical system, to doctors, working so more doctors can start up things like cash for care if they so choose. There's really across the lines, I see things that borderline on corruption and corrupt practices. Same with going and raiding people that have that are trying to sell cannabis oil and other things. Other items that are currently scheduled but that are medically assisting Iowans currently. And I see a lot of problems with the mess we're making in that market. Not allowing a freer market in even hemp and cannabis sales across the board agriculturally, but there's a lot of money being talked about, and I really just want to keep us from creating a gray market where we're actually taxing people so much on these new markets and restricting them so much that you know, there's still going to be criminal activity selling them outside of the system.
Right. So just a quick question. This is for yes or no. I guess you could add caveats if you need to. You would enforce, as Attorney General, enforce all Iowa laws, whether you agree with them or not?
Yes. The only caveat I would have is that did this get passed appropriately in accordance with Iowa code and the constitutions, and then at that point, I think that is not a role of the Attorney General to continue to seek a change that has, you know, passed through the legislature, been signed by the governor.
Okay. Final question. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Podcast. So what's your favorite coffee drink?
I honestly have, I don't have a specific favorite, but I don't put anything in my coffee. I just take it, the bean
take
and the
black
water as simple as possible.
All right. Well, hey, any just brief closing argument for our listeners before I let you go?
Yeah, I appreciate the time. Send any questions to battaliaforiowa.com or marcobattalia@protonmail.com, or just type in my name and my social media will come up. So
send me any
questions.
Spell your name because sounds different than it's spelled.
Yes. Marco, M-A-R-C-O, Battaglia, B-A-T-T-A-G-L-I-A, and then it's 4FORIowa.com. And I really think we need to look at the law and Iowa code in terms of harm reduction. Is this effective in our modern society, in the future we want to see for Iowa? And then the judiciary, the county attorney level, I want to see simple and to the point legislation, persecution, and I want to see accountability. I don't think anyone in the state is above the law. I don't think anyone in D.C. is above the law. We're going to have, I think we are going to see some headbutting with even the major financial system, what the Federal Reserve is doing, sound currency. And I think that getting people that aren't going to play this football between Democrats and Republicans into state positions is going to be very beneficial to the citizenry, even maybe on a broader scale, and what's going on at the federal level between butting heads with fiat currency and the Federal Reserve. I would support any president that wants to take up those issues. And I think getting people in there that don't want to fight, they're not necessarily looking for a fight with a state legislature or the federal government or a president. You're only going to stand up to those various areas of governance if an Iowan is being harmed and there's a clear-cut case to why that Iowan is being harmed by this action.
All right. Well, hey, thank you, Marco, for coming on. I appreciate it, and good luck to you.
Yeah, I appreciate it very much. Have a good day.
All right. All right. Take care. Bye.
And that concludes today's episode of the Caffeinated Thoughts Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. If you happen to be listening to this podcast somewhere other than on our website, please be sure to check out caffeinatedthoughts.com. Again, that's caffeinatedthoughts.com, CAFFEINATED, thoughts. You can Google it. It'll show up at the top of your search screen. Be sure to check out our website because that's where we're putting up 3-4 articles a day generally. At least that's how it's been the last couple, couple months anyway. So you don't want to miss a single update from us. That's news and commentary from a conservative Christian perspective. Also, be sure to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, sign up for our emails. That way you don't miss a single update. Then you could subscribe to this podcast using your favorite podcast app, such as Apple Podcasts or Google Play or Stitcher, Podbean, SoundCloud, and Spotify. If you signing up for one of those, subscribing to one of those, you get to listen to us on your phone or iPad or tablet using your favorite podcast app. You could also listen to it on your computer as well. Want to thank you so much for listening. I appreciate it. This has been fun winding down before election day. So I don't know about you, but I'm looking forward to election day getting here and leaving. That way, maybe I'll settle down for a couple months before we get into the 2020 swing. I can't believe I said that out loud. Anyway, hey, thank you so much. And this is Shane Vanderhart. God bless. Take care. Until next time.